Sports Radio 92.9 The Game. We are the morning shift with Mike, Bo, I'm Allie Mack, and Dylan is behind the glass not playing country right now at 8:41. This hour has been brought to you by Mark Spain Real Estate. Go to markspain.com, get a guaranteed offer on your home today, and start packing. We've been talking about Atlanta Falcons training camp. Kicked off yesterday. We were live out there. Everybody was live out there from 92.9 The Game. And our takeaways from the day. Was there really anything from yesterday that we haven't gotten to broach that you saw?
I think we've talked about things very broadly today. And you know, we got a chance to really dive in a little bit to the nuts and bolts surrounding Billy Bowman being, you know, on certain fields and Kyle Pitts, personnel-wise, where he's lining up at, what the expectations are for him, what his limitations are at this point, the fact that Troy Anderson, you know, obviously not part of what's going on out there. But I just think overall, just trying to take in the 30,000-foot view, the energy was really good.
Mm-hmm.
And that's one of the things you look at. You always kind of have that vibe on day one, but it's year two under Raheem. It's a lot of the same staff. It just seemed like guys were bouncing around and really brought a really good energy to all the 11-on-11 stuff. It wasn't like goofy energy. Like I saw a video of Dak Prescott riding a broomstick, through one of the drills going over a bat. I don't know if you guys saw. It was weird.
No, I did not see that.
And I was like, okay, that's just strange. I'm sure people just love seeing that. It wasn't like weird energy. It wasn't like dancing energy, but it was like everybody moving around with a good pace and very almost businesslike. And I think that's important to kind of keep in mind because we've talked about Cowboys training camp and Bengals training camp and talked about all these things that aren't related to the on-field product. And the Falcons very much seem like they are focused on one thing, and that's winning football games.
Mm-hmm.
So I love to see it.
Yeah, Stephon Diggs lost his dog. Did you see that?
I did see that.
I didn't see that.
He brought his dog to training camp, and he's like in pads and everything. He got his helmet in one hand. He's like chasing his dog around a fence, and then like grabs it.
Does girlfriend bring the dog out to watch?
No,
or something?
I think he brought the dog to training camp.
How do you bring a dog?
Isn't his girlfriend that rapper chick?
Cardi B. Yes.
Yeah.
Okay.
Here's the thing. It was adoption day, and so it was an adoptable dog that he was kind of showcasing, and it got away from him.
Oh, that's not what the tweet.
That's not what the tweet in the video I saw said.
You can't believe Twitter.
You know what? Can I sound off a second? I'm going to make a statement, and then I'm not going back. Manny, who's him, and I tweet all the time. He's my boy. All right. In all fairness, but he wants to argue a lot. Bro, y'all act like KP is old and lost a step. He's 24, not lost anything physically. I promise you, he will have 1,000 yards and 8 touchdowns his contract year. Well, here's what I'm going to tell you. I don't give a damn. I'm not talking about what he is supposed to be or how old he is anymore. Here's what I'm going to tell you. I don't care that he's 24, and I don't care they ran a 4-4. All I care about is he's physical in the top of routes, and right off, and off this, and if he's lined up at the line and he runs crisp routes and he gives everything, I am done talking about what he can be. What he is what I've seen. I'm done talking about it. It's not his fault. It's a mismatch. It's quarterbacks. Everybody else can get it done out there. Why can't he? I'm done talking about hypotheticals with that player. All I will talk about from now on is what he has done or what he does in games. That's it.
I just don't know where the evidence lies for that statement. I hope he's right. I hope he's right, man. But I do think he's lost a step. It wasn't 100% coming off the knee a couple of years ago. Okay, cool. And look, most players in year five are not what they were in year one. Physically, it is what it is. You've been through 5 rigorous seasons. You've had a major knee surgery. I don't think it's stepping out of line to say he's not a 4-4 runner anymore. 4-6 is still you think Travis Kelce runs a 4-6? No.
No.
You know what I mean? Like, so you can still be that guy.
You know what Travis Kelce does?
Gets open.
Runs crisp routes. Yeah,
yeah. He's
good route runner.
Top of the route, yeah.
I mean, don't you just get exhausted though with it?
Yeah, and I want to focus
on
other
things.
I'm exhausted with it. I want to focus on other parts of this team.
Half the people hate him, the other half want to make excuses. I'm just over it. I don't dislike him. I just want to see us win. All I care about is making the playoffs. I haven't had a playoff game in 7 years, man.
Well, and from the energy Mike was just talking about yesterday, that is possible. And like we've been saying all morning, what they want to do is win. They want to be a playoff team. So we'll see what happens. I definitely learned a lesson yesterday, though, is when the sideline players start backing up, you get out of the way, too.
Yeah, I was from the hill watching this, and I was like, how's this going to go for Allie?
Yeah. Yeah. It's so funny. I was watching a throwing drill with DJ Shockley, and TJ Yates kind of jogs over, and he kind of looks at us like, y'all might want to watch out. If they overthrow me in this throwing drill, they're going to hit y'all square in the face.
Yeah. It was very close. And I just looked over at Mike. I was like, this is so cool. But Raheem Morris, one of the things he talked about yesterday is that he is excited for position battles on defense.
You know, there's a bunch, you know, they're all over the place, particularly on defense. You know, we got some really good battles over there, you know, well documented. You know, offense, we're probably a little bit more established on who's going to be doing what and who's playing where. You know, obviously, we'll have a brand new center out there at a full-time basis, even though he started a bunch of games for us. We got to find ways to get Tyler on the field. We got to find ways to get Bijan on the field. So all of those things, all of those kind of chessmates on offense are kind of always fun. On defense, we got some real battles. You know, we got new linebackers. We got some people in the new in the secondary. We got people new up front. We got some second-year players that are getting chance to get some exciting things to happen. When you talk about Dolas and Rook and the Trice coming back, you got your new rookies coming in. Talking about Jalen Walker, you got Pierce. You know who's playing what role, who's doing what, and expecting high contributions from those really 2 years of young classes. Right, last year it was well documented we had an older veteran team on defense that we played with those guys, and now that crew from last year, you know, we call them sophomores, but really, you know, freshmen, so to speak. Man, those guys are ready to go. We got a big deep class there.
I thought Rook sounded vocal yesterday. I heard Rook talking multiple times, and it wasn't like a trash talk, and not necessarily even talking to offensive players, but talking after a play and kind of hyping players up. It's clear to me that he's obviously taking a more visible role as a starter on this team. You know, after a pass breakup, a PBU down the field, he kind of jogging downfield, dapping up like the safety or corner, whoever made it happen. So I love seeing those guys fly around. When we hear clips from Raheem, I think 80% of it is kind of throwaway comments, and there's like 20% of it where you're like, oh, that's interesting. Like he says, hey, we got to find, you know, ways to get Bijan on the field. No, you don't. He's just starting running back. Just put him on the field, and you just run plays to him. Like, you know, to find ways to get Bijan on the field. But when you start hearing him name Dorless, Trice, things like that, I think that's where it becomes interesting.
I think, and Arch and I were sitting there watching, and they had Dorless on the edge. And what, you know, like you talked about earlier, they literally lined up the front was lined up in a 3-4 type alignment, and they had Dorless on the edge, and me and Arch were talking, and he was like, I think people forget that guy came off the edge at times at Oregon, and he was pretty good. And I said, well, the thing for me though is, you know, and I've talked to some guys in the building, they said that the plan was kind of a redshirt year for Dorless. But I told Arch, I said, the problem is that's not how fans think. That's how we think. We see a guy drafted and we get excited. And then we see a guy inactive 14 out of 17 weeks. And in our mind, because we're not there and no one's saying, look, this is our plan publicly, we think that guy sucks or that guy fall out of favor or he's not what they thought or he's not good enough or he's injured. We don't think we wanted him to do that because we felt like that was our best shot, and we had this thought, like, we don't think like that because, you know, why? It's not our job.
Yeah.
The transparency is good sometimes in that aspect where they can tell you, but teams don't want to be transparent because NFL teams are always hiding stuff. It feels like they have this secret plan.
Well, and I think a lot of it too becomes revisionist if I'm being completely transparent, because if Brandon Dorless is out on the field last year just absolutely wrecking people, you're probably going to find a way to make him part of your defense, right? I think that you can
agree.
Go in.
No, I do agree with that.
I think you can go in with the plan of, hey, we're going to redshirt this guy. You know, we'll give him a year. And truth be told, in the NFL, as fans, we look at it that way because a lot of times head coaches don't have a long enough leash to be able to plan ahead like that.
It's like, dude,
if this guy didn't happen now, you're done.
No, you're right. I actually think Rook was on the same plan, and I think Rook forced his way on the field.
I tend to agree with that, actually. And obviously through other things that happened, but necessity being one of them, because you were so bad up front last year. But I think that he is going to be well suited for what Ulbrich's asking him to do right now.
I do too. It kind of similar to what he was asked to do in college. Yeah, I got. I'm definitely gonna fire the egg up. I'm gonna put. The one thing I don't put Baron Burton Xavier sauce on is salmon. And I got a big slab from Sam's the other day. But I think I'm going to fire up some chicken, too, because Amy doesn't eat the salmon. So I'll probably make her some chicken.
Dude,
Lindsay's
the same way.
I do put Baron Burton's on there, the W sauce.
Lindsay's the same way. She's from freaking Florida and won't eat fish. It drives me nuts.
That is a little bit weird.
Yeah, it's strange.
That is a little bit weird. Nico Ayamalaliavu.
I was like, I'm not rescuing you. I'm not rescuing you, man.
I had it sounded out in the break. And it, you know what's funny is when I hear his name said, I'm like, yeah, that's how you say it. And then I go to say, I'm
sounds
like,
right.
Ayamalava, Ayamalaliavu. Yeah. What? Yeah. I don't know. It doesn't matter. Nico, everybody knows him. Tennessee quarterback who left to go to UCLA. All that stuff was about money, right? Now, there's been reports that it came out that he told, that his family told, his dad told the program, hey, you better put better players around him or else.
Right.
But now he spoke, and he says, it's one of the hardest decisions I ever had to make. My driving factor to come back home was my family. And I hope every Tennessee fan understands that. It was just a lot of drama. But, man, I'm excited to be at UCLA. He said all this at Big Ten Media Days. So, basically, he's saying that it wasn't about money. I just think the outside world in general thinks that it's something that it wasn't. Going back home was always in the back of my head, just being closer to my family. Took a toll on me getting my family to Tennessee. It was just a lot of traveling. Because that part makes sense. But, dude, this thing was publicly about freaking money. And there is no way to rein it back. And if you thought you were being misrepresented, why didn't you say so?
I don't know. See, I kind of tend to agree with them. I don't know that it was about money. I think it was about not money for him, at least. I think it was about money for playing other players to come in and be better players off the transfer portal and everything else.
Then why did his brother, who's at another school in the SEC,
yeah,
who had gotten paid,
yeah,
suddenly leave too? After he already got paid. So he went somewhere to get – why would he even leave? Why would he go to that school? You remember that?
Yeah, I know what you're talking about. I'm just not sure the argument you're trying to make.
Why take money and then just turn around and leave? Why, if you knew what your brother was going through, which was Nico,
yeah,
then why would you go somewhere, yeah, instead of just staying straight up and just going straight to UCLA to begin with?
Yeah, I don't know. That's a good question. And I think my biggest takeaway from this entire thing, and I saw, you know, some of the stuff put out about him saying, you know, it's about family, and the news breaking that multiple people have said from within the program that his dad was threatening to leave if they didn't get better players around him. I find that comical. And I, by no means am I a Tennessee fan. I think that Josh Heupel's a great coach. But I find it comical for a dad of a quarterback to be like, got to find good players around him. Mm-hmm. What do you think I'm trying to do? For the love, what do you think my job has been for the last 4 years? You think I'm trying to find mediocre players? Like, do you think that I'm trying to be average?
I'm gonna tell you something. I understand what you're saying, and I acknowledge it. But after what Jaden Rashada's dad pulled with not only Florida but Miami and the multiple schools, what Dylan Raiola pulled here at Georgia, I can't give the benefit of the doubt anymore on the ridiculous things that are said to coaches by dads and
I fully believe he said that. I believe his dad was like, hey, you got to find better players around my son. But it's just comical to me because it's like, what do you think I'm trying to do?
Maybe that's when the breaking point for Heupel was. It's like, you know what? Just leave. I don't care.
Yeah.
I don't
like,
care.
What do we, you we think you. I'm trying to do? Dude, my job is on the line. You gotta, you think I'm worried about your kid?
Right.
Like, my job's on the line. Oh, you know what? Because your dad said it, I'm going to go recruit better players.
If I'm Heupel, I would have said, well, tell your son to show up in a playoff game.
Tell your son to take a pay cut. How about that? So I can pay some of these other kids.
You know, yeah, your son's great against non-Power 5 schools or Power 4 schools. And then everybody, you know, he's awful against Power Fours, and then non-Power Fours. He's a superstar. Maybe he should go there, get more money and better players around him.
Yeah, he played well against Bama, so I'm not going to say anything.
That is going to do it for us. For Mike, Bo, Dylan, and myself, Allie Mack, thanks for being here today. Have a wonderful weekend. The Steakhouse is coming up next with Rusty Manziel and Abe Gordon filling in for Steak. That's next on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game. And don't forget to...
Y'all stay cool.